Welcome to NextUS 818 Podcast, a reflective platform for connecting past successes with future progress in the African American community. I am your host, Dr. JC. The inaugural season of NextUS 818 Podcast focuses on the 688th Central Postal Directory Battalion. In previous episodes, I have interviewed 688th descendants. In episode 6, we will talk about the United States Army Women's Museum at Fort Lee, Virginia, which will be the home of the new exhibit honoring the 688th Battalion.
My guest tonight is Tracy Bradford, curator of the U.S. Women's Army Museum. Welcome, Tracy.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
I'd like to start with an interesting fact that you shared with me. Secretary of Defense Lloyd J. Austin recently approved a name change for Fort Lee. The new name will be Fort Greg Adams, in honor of two trailblazing African-American officers, retired Lieutenant General Arthur Gregg and the late Colonel Charity Adams of the 688th. This is exciting news and an incredible honor. So tell us how that came about.
Absolutely. It is exciting news. So in fiscal year 21, the National Defense Authorization Act directed the establishment of a commission that would look at all of the DOD assets, the Department of Defense assets, that were somehow affiliated with the Confederacy. And so there were 9 Army installations that were identified. And Robert E. Lee, our Fort Lee here is named for Robert E. Lee. And of course, it was on that list. So the commission stood up, and originally they received 34,000 submissions for names or comments for new names for these 9 installations. And so they set about interviewing communities where these installations were located to determine how they would approach new names and then eventually select new names for these 9 installations.
Okay. So since my audience may not be familiar with Lieutenant General Gregg and Lieutenant Colonel Adams, tell us why they were selected.
Okay, so Fort Lee is the home of CASCOM, which is the Combined Arms Support Command, and we're also known as the Sustainment Center of Excellence. So Lieutenant General Gregg and Lieutenant Colonel Charity Adams are both wonderful examples of soldiers who have worked in the Army as sustainers or support personnel. And so Lieutenant General Gregg is actually the only person on the list for the 9 installations that's still alive. He came into the Army in 1945, so right at the end of World War II. And he actually helped desegregate the United States Army when he was stationed right here at Fort Lee. And he went on to have a great career. He served in Japan and Vietnam and Germany. And in fact, the Army established an award for logisticians in 2016, and they named it after him. So the local community here is extremely excited that Lieutenant General Gregg is on the list. And then, of course, Lieutenant Colonel Charity Adams, as the commander of the 688th, is also on the list. And when the commission was originally accepting those 34,000 submissions, I am proud to say that we here at the Army Women's Museum and my colleagues in the Quartermaster Museum right next door and the Ordnance Training Support Facility, which is another one of the historical entities here, we got together under the direction of Carrie Atkinson, who wanted us all to give submissions as a team. So we initially submitted the names that we thought would be appropriate. As a team, we met and discussed them. Then we narrowed it down to 3, and we went back and had to come up with additional information for our own local team. And so out of the historical entities, the museums, and the training support facility here at Fort Lee, we chose Charity Adams. And so she was our submission. I'm sure that other people also submitted her, but so from those 34,000 names, amazingly, the commission narrowed it down to a group of 3,663, and then eventually whittled it down to 461 candidates, and then again down to 87 nominees with 10 suggested for the names. And they kept coming back to the communities. So here at Fort Lee, we at the Army Women's Museum actually hosted a commission panel that was interaction with the community. They really cared about what the communities thought, how they felt about these things. And at every opportunity, a representative from the Fort Lee historical entity stood up and advocated for Charity Adams. So we were just thrilled when she was selected. And part of the reason in their, publication is that this is the home of the Army Women's Museum. So there's a natural tie to Army women's history here.
That was quite a process.
I know.
And certainly quite a process and quite an honor to have the name changed. And I want to talk a little bit about the museum itself. As you know, I had a chance to visit the museum recently. And before we discuss the exhibit, I'd like for you to share briefly some background history on the museum and your current collection.
Sure, absolutely. So this museum began as the Women's Army Corps Museum down in Fort McClellan, Alabama in 1955. So those first WAC veterans from World War II literally sold bricks and cookies and built their own display down at Fort McClellan. They had then a hallway, it turned into a room and eventually a museum. And so for many years, the museum stayed down there at Fort McClellan. Even after the Women's Army Corps was disestablished in 1978, the museum remained there. But in the late 90s, there was a base realignment and closure, and the Army needed to find a new home for the museum. So they chose Fort Lee, and in part it was a homecoming because after World War II, Fort Lee, which back then was Camp Lee, was the first permanent training center of the Women's Army Corps. So the Army, you know, it was a wonderful fit for the museum. But with the move came a name change to from the WAC Museum to the United States Army Women's Museum, and also a mission change. So instead of covering that 30 years of history, we now cover history from 1775 to the present. And a few years ago, we underwent a renovation and an expansion. So we are one of the most modern Army museums, and we have five beautiful galleries that tell this history, as I said, from 1775 to the present. And we have about 6,000 artifacts in our collection, and we have a wonderful archive here of over 1.5 million documents.
It's an amazing collection.
And so actually, we're part of a larger organization. We fall under something called the Army Museum Enterprise. And so there are over 40 Army museums all across the states and around the world. And so we have many sister organizations that tell other types of history. So we are part of a big, very professional enterprise.
So you have extensive knowledge about women's service and contributions to the United States Army. What's the significance of the 6888 service to America, in your opinion?
Well, the 6888 is special on many levels. And I'm proud to say that when this museum opened their doors in 2001, we actually had an exhibit to the 6888. So while there is a national swell of interest right now, this story has been cherished by the museum for many, many years. And I think some of the special aspects are that these women in the 6888 were some of the very first women in the Army, as well as the first African-American women in the Army. And so they're really facing two massive challenges, and they step up and they accomplish this overwhelming task, going overseas, tackling this six-month backlog of mail, and with grace and poise and dedication, working their, you know, three shifts a day, 7 days a week, and getting the mission done, and supporting that motto, no mail, low morale. And so I just think that they're an inspiration on many levels.
The space, you said you have seven galleries?
We have five permanent galleries and one special gallery.
Special gallery. So the special gallery is the location that we're talking about?
Yes.
So the space set aside is about 720 square feet at the entrance of the museum with beautiful, beautiful lighting. Describe what you envision for that gallery.
Great. So the gallery, it's a really, as you said, a lovely space. And it's going to tell the story of Lieutenant Colonel Charity Adams and the 6888. So the way we envision the exhibit at this time is there'll be an introduction area, then a section dedicated to Charity Adams, really in that area, focusing on the fact that Charity Adams came into the very first Women's Army Auxiliary Corps OCS class. She was one of those first 40 Black women who came into the Army. There were 440 40 women total who went to that first officer candidate class. There was a quota system in place at the time. Only 2% of the Army could be women, and only 10% of those could be African American. So when those first women went in at the request of Eleanor Roosevelt and Mary McLeod Bethune, 10% were African American. So we really want to establish the fact that Charity Adams and Abby Noel Campbell and Mary Kearney were there from the very beginning. These are the women who are going to go on and become leaders of the 6888. So there will be a leadership section at the beginning. Then we'll tackle the mission, the overwhelming backlog of mail. We'll talk about the training at Fort Oglethorpe. We're going to talk about some of the experiences of traveling on the ships with the submarine attacks. We're going to talk about the loss of the three members of the 6888. So there'll be the majority of the exhibit will be about the mission of the 6888. And then the last part of the exhibit is going to be the legacy. And that's really, honestly, Doc, where you come in and all of the wonderful family members, just that this story is finally coming to light at a national level. As I said, we've been telling it here for 20 years, but suddenly there's this swell and this recognition with the awarding of the Congressional Gold Medal, with the unit awards, with the monument being dedicated in Buffalo Soldier Park at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, with the making of the Broadway musical. It's just really all coming together so beautifully now. And so we want to emphasize that legacy and the work of the families in holding this history and now sharing this history with the nation.
I know that you started collecting some items already. Describe some of the more interesting memorabilia that you found.
Well, we are in the process now of a collection effort. So prior to this collection effort, we were the home of Charity Adams' uniform, and that was really basically the only artifact that we had representing the 6888. We do have some artwork, some beautiful watercolors by an artist named Ann Tilson. But with this collection effort, our executive director, Colonel Brian Hunt, has reached out to the families of the 6888, who in most part are still holding that history themselves. So we have been approached with additional uniforms. One we're really excited about. It's an Eisenhower jacket. So it's the short jacket, which we only have one of those in our collection, and that belonged to the director of the Women's Army Corps in World War II, Colonel Hobby. So we are excited about one of our potential donors has the Foot Locker that belonged to Mary Kearney. We were very excited about your mother's hot comb that you showed us, which tells just a fascinating personal story about beauty and grooming and professionalism as a WAC and keeping her hair. When you look at the images of these 6888 women, they are all beautifully coiffed and very professional looking. We've also been approached with some interesting memorabilia that was given to the women from German POWs. So one of them has jewelry box that was handmade by a German prisoner. We have some mugs, Nazi mugs, some German medical bags. So all kinds of fascinating things. Probably one of the most interesting that I just heard about this past weekend was that the Early family still has their mother's command journal. So she literally a notebook where she wrote all of her command notes. And our colleague Edna Cummings was in Ohio for an event at the Charity Adams Early School for Girls. And the family shared this with her. And she said she literally got goosebumps reading the command journal. So we're all just so excited about these items that have really just never been exposed and have never been shared and have never been explored by historians. So that's a true treasure.
So there are 6888 descendants listening to this podcast who have memorabilia stored in boxes and basements and attics. What message would you like to send to them about the museum collection?
Right. So we want the families of the 6888 to know that we are a very professional organization, that if you donate your objects to the Army Museum Enterprise, to the U.S. Army Women's Museum, they will be cared for, they will be conserved, they will be inventoried, they will be taken care of, and I think most importantly, they will be shared with the nation. And so when they come into our system, they will not only be on display for this exhibit that we're doing, but then for future exhibits and for all of the museums in the museum enterprise. So I understand it's really hard to make that decision to give over a family treasure. And I understand that on a personal level, I understand it on a professional level. But just to be able to share, here at the Army Women's Museum, we have a visitorship between 20 to 25,000 a year. And that's, I think that's going to increase when we have the 6888 exhibit, which will be, you know, in conjunction with the name change. So it's just an awesome opportunity to share that history with our country. And the kinds of things we're still looking for, I would love if we could find artifacts that illustrate the work that was being done by the women. So I would love a mail bag. I would love any kind of mail stamp, any of those phonographs that, you know, you could, the soldiers could record personal messages on those, the little records. Anything that represents the work would be a welcomed addition to our exhibit. I do have some V-mail here, which is really an interesting element to talk about how mail was photographed and sent over in canisters to be reprinted in Europe. So,
well, that was interesting because we think of V-mail, it's like, what is V-mail? Because V-mail people today would say, well, that's voicemail. Well, they didn't have voicemail then. Yeah. But V-mail is something entirely different from the 40s.
So. Right, exactly.
And so I'm gonna challenge the audience to Google it. So.
Yes.
So what's the time frame for opening the exhibit in the gallery?
So right now we are still in the collection phase. We will have the exhibit designed by a gentleman named Steve Feldman, and he is the designer who did our entire gallery when we did our remodel in 2018. So once we have our artifacts collected, then we can turn it over to Steve, who will work on the exhibit design. Our goal, best case scenario, if we could, you know, maybe speed up the collection effort a little, would be January of 2024 to open the exhibit. But once we get the object, we can't plan the exhibit without the objects. Once we have the objects, then we can plan the exhibit, and then that will go to a fabricator who will, you know, put the whole thing together. So it's going to be amazing. I'm really excited.
So to my listeners, we're doing an all call to the 6888 descendants to please get in touch with Tracy at the museum.
Yeah, so Doc, when I was, prior to coming here, I worked at the National Museum of the United States Army at Fort Belvoir, which we just opened right as COVID was starting. We had a similar type exhibit there that I was so honored to be a part of, which was the Nisei exhibit. And so once again, the Nisei story of the Japanese Americans who served in World War II, it was well known, but there had not been a formal collection effort done. So the Army Museum Enterprise did not have the material culture that we needed to tell that story. So we went out to the families and we partnered with organizations and all of that came in. And now there's a beautiful exhibit at the National Museum up near DC. So I feel like this story is similarly important, and it's something that's still being held by the families, that there's a lot out there.
I know, and a lot of families are reluctant to let the items go. So it's a work in progress.
Totally understand that. I absolutely do. I think when we think about these precious items too, though, there is a legacy question that you need to ask, which is, do you have continued family members who are going to care for the items, right? Because
As much as we love our younger generations, I think we know the answers to the question. And the younger generations are living in smaller places. They just don't have all the storage. So,
well,
if they have the interest, they don't have all the storage.
They don't have the storage, right? Especially if they're in one of those tiny homes. Well, the other thing I wanted to say, though, it's in our archive here. So we do have this beautiful archives. It's really a beautiful research facility. So anything that comes to us, and if the families want to donate images, photographs, things like that, we can digitize them and give back the originals. So we don't have to keep the originals. But
as you did with my family,
we scanned it all. So we have a beautiful high-res copy. But think about this as we go forward in time. Actually, I just heard yesterday, I was listening to NPR, and there's a new book that was just published about African-American soldiers in World War II. I believe it was called Half American. I need to look it up because I'll want to read that. Have you heard about that one?
Not yet. No.
Okay, I'll have to look it up. But so researchers, authors, PhD candidates, all kinds of people, universities come here to research. So also by sharing your story with the national level museum, you are creating an opportunity for future generations to learn and to teach and to capture this history.
Let me ask you this. Not everybody will be able to get to the museum. Will there be some kind of digital access once the exhibit is up?
Yes, there will. Thanks for asking that. So we've gotten several collections from individuals that have very rich archives. So what we will do is with the exhibit, there will be an online component. So say with your mother, Annie Knight, you'll be able to go online and look at maybe 10 to 12 images that will create a timeline of her experience. And what's great about that is that then we can use the postcards and the photographs and the letters and other material to kind of flesh out that story. So we'll be able to put in the great photographs of all the sightseeing trips that they took, or pictures of their barracks, or pictures of them bowling, having a recreational time. So the online element will give us an opportunity to go deeper into the story. It's really hard when you're designing an exhibit because we have word limits. You know, you can't have an exhibit that is just flush with text or it's too overwhelming to your visitors. So one of the hardest things to do as a curator is to be able to pare it down. And so by having an online element, that gives us the freedom to say more and go deeper.
I want to ask you a couple of quick questions about your background. tell us about your background and career and what led you to be the curator there.
Oh, well, I actually began my career as a teacher. So when I came out of college, I got a teaching degree and I married a soldier, an officer, and we traveled around with the Army for over 20 years. So teaching was a great way to be able to transport my career with me. And when we landed here at Fort Lee, I transitioned from classroom teaching into museum education. And I have to say, museum education is just the greatest way to teach ever because you have access to this wonderful primary source material. You have students coming in when they're on field trips, so they're very excited. I got to work with soldiers and do soldier education. So that was sort of my gateway into the museum field. Then I went up to the National Museum, was in education there, and then I was given the opportunity to come here to the Army Women's Museum as the curator. And so in the curatorial role, I not only get to teach, but I get to work with the artifacts and I get to work with programming and I get to work with special events and I get to meet awesome people like you and the other families. So I have a dream job, I will admit. That's how I came in to be where I am.
Well, you're doing wonderful work there. I mean, it is a fantastic museum, and my sister and I were there. We really appreciate the time you spent with us and everything you showed us. I felt like a kid in the candy shop, just going through and seeing all of the history, being a history buff myself. I have a few final questions before we wrap up tonight. What do you think is the legacy of the 6888? I mean, you know a lot about service and in the military and to the service to the country. What's that special legacy, the 6888?
Well, I would say there's several. So I would say for Army women, the 6888 opened the door for service for all women, but especially African-American women who are now reaching the highest ranks in our Army. So I think that the work that the 6888 women did laid the groundwork for, you know, all future generations. And I see today many Army women from all different ranks, when they learn about the story, saying, wow, I maybe didn't know that. And wow, thank you so much for that. So I definitely think that the legacy there is in service. But I think a larger legacy is kind of a national legacy in terms of the work that many of the 6888 women went on to do. So Charity Adams, for example, decided to get out of the Army at the end of the war. And she said that she felt that the Army was sort of on its way to racial desegregation and that she wanted to use her skills more in her community. And I think that many of our civil rights leaders were service members, and they went on to, you know, lead the country forward with some of that experience that they gained during the war. And then because of the GI Bill, what I see with the family members of like your family and other families, the GI Bill, either in terms of providing opportunities to higher education or home ownership, moved these families into kind of the maybe the middle class or the even higher up than that. And so, you know, in your family, Doc, and other families, so many PhDs, so many physicians, so many amazing degrees. So I think that that opportunity of service, which then translated into education and just this legacy of strong families, and especially what I'm saying are strong women, is something really beautiful that has come out of that service.
I agree. Absolutely. And it's been amazing for me to have an opportunity to start to interview the descendants and to hear the different stories and the legacy. So it's exciting.
Well, and many of the women, their secondary career after the Army was unbelievably amazing. Just the, you know, what they went on to do. You know, you might want to look at, say, somebody like Debbie Johnson Rountree, who went on to Howard Law School and then worked for Thurgood Marshall and, you know, argued some very famous court cases, then became a minister in D.C. Just, I mean, after the service, she wasn't in the 6AAA, by the way, but she was in that same first class with Charity Adams. It's an amazing service to our country for her entire life.
Absolutely. So one final question. What's the web address for the museum? I'm sure some of our listeners might be interested in learning more.
Okay, so our web address is www.awm.lee.army.mil. And I also wanted to suggest, if anyone is interested in learning more about the Naming Commission, they have submitted their final report to Congress, and their website is www.thenamingcommission.gov. And so if you would like to see all of, you know, they have the list of everyone who was nominated, but then some of the biographies of the people who got closer to those final 87 names on the list, you can learn a lot about. There were just so many people that were certainly worthy of the recognition that was given to them through the Naming Commission. So if you're interested in that, that is available online as well.
Well, thank you. Any closing comments you want to share?
I just want to thank you. I had such a great time when you came down, and I love it that the families are so enthusiastic and so supportive. And we're just at this really a wonderful intersection of interest and enthusiasm and recognition. It's just a great time to be able to tell this story.
Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight and for sharing the exciting information about the museum and the upcoming exhibit. I am very grateful to have you on.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks so much.
To my audience, thank you for listening to Nexus 818 Podcast. I hope you enjoyed our show. If you have questions or topics you'd like to discuss, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email the show at nextus818podcast@gmail.com. That's nextus818podcast@gmail.com. I like to end each show with a favorite reflection. Tonight, I'll share a quote about service from political and spiritual leader Mahatma Gandhi. The best way to find yourself is to lose yourself in service to others. See you for our next show on Wednesday, December 7th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You can catch the show on Anchor and Spotify.